good idea not to just focus on the cruise ship people, but, you know, when you have tourists in general, to assume the worst and take the precautions.
A norovirus outbreak on board a visiting cruise ship reminds locals that fighting off the tourist season sickness is in our own dirty hands. And a Derby controversy ends with a new tournament winner. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. In the final hours of this year's King Salmon Derby in Haines, a 34.5-pound Chinook was turned into dock officials. But the winning fish, declared 2 days later by the Derby committee, was nearly 1 pound lighter than that.
This is the first major conflict since I've been doing the Derby in the 9 years that we've had to have a meeting like that.
Kim Larson is president of the Haines Sportsmen's Association, which sponsors the Derby. Larson's been a member of the Derby committee for 9 years and explains that the group relies on a predetermined set of rules to certify winners and make disqualifications.
One of the rules that is written right into the book is it is a requirement for there to be at least 2 fishermen per boat. Ticketed fishermen may not fish in the same boat with non-ticketed fishermen, or they will be disqualified for that day. Everybody in the boat must have a Derby ticket.
It was that rule that convinced this year's Derby committee, after less than a half hour of debate on Monday night, to disqualify the biggest Derby fish turned in and award first place to a new angler.
And it came to our attention that that was not the case on the boat, and the boat was disqualified from the Derby for that day. And that did not actually take place until after Derby was final, because any of the rules need to be discussed as a Derby committee. We had a meeting, and it was a unanimous decision with all the Derby committee that we need to follow the rule as it is stated in the brochure.
The boat that caught the larger fish had 4 fishermen in it, but only 3 Derby tickets. Derby officials say a 4th ticket was eventually purchased, but after the boat had already been out on the water. Consequently, Amy Dunbar's 34.5-pounder, as well as another fish caught on the same boat, was eliminated from the prize list, and Tony DeWitt's 33.4-pound fish was named the winner of the 32nd annual Derby.
We watched her hook it and reel it in and everything right by the Derby dock, so it was pretty exciting. And I know she feels kind of bad about winning the Derby the way she did, but she deserves it. The rules were followed on their boat.
The rule that requires all fishermen in the boat to hold a Derby ticket has caused confusion before. It rose to its current prominence in the Derby guide because of a similar incident, says Larson.
Well, it's in bold print on the back of the brochure. 3 years ago, there was a family that was kind of upset with me because I said that everybody in the boat had to have a fishing license. Kids, everybody in the boat needs to have not a fishing license, but a Derby ticket, and if you're old enough, you do need the fishing license also. And at that point, I said, you know what, enough, I'm going to put it in bold print. And I put it in bold print 3 years ago, that part of the brochure, and that's why we decided we needed to stand by this, because it's a rule that's written in the Derby brochure, and we didn't want in years to come that if somebody says, oh, well, you broke the rule for them, why can't you break it for me? We're sticking to the rules, that's why we have rules, and that's how we are running the Derby.
Individual Derby workers don't have the authority to disqualify an entry, which is why a committee meeting was required before the final winner could be named. The committee generally leaves a week in between the close of fishing and the awards banquet to allow time to certify results. But Larson says they've never had to make eliminations in her time, and they've definitely never had to name a new winner.
I feel bad for Amy. And I just, because I've never been in a position that I had to do what I had to do, and I feel bad, but I have to go by the rules, you know, that's just the way it happened.
Not counting the disqualified fish, 44 kings were turned in over the 2-weekend Derby. Larson says a lot of fish were caught on the town side this year, and estimates that 80% were white kings. All of the fish, including the ineligible kings, were sold to Dijon Delights to be smoked and to raise money. Fundraisers like this have enabled the Sportsmen's Association to donate close to $11,000 to local causes in the last 9 years.
It's a fundraiser. You know, all the money we make, we are all volunteers. All the money we do make goes right back into the community for youth activities. So I feel that, you know, I don't like to be in a position that we have to make these kind of decisions. I feel that all fishermen that are entering in the Derby and stuff should be honest enough to know that this is a fundraiser for our youth in our town and how much we support them by giving them our time every year to put on a Derby.
No kids' awards were claimed this year, so kids' prizes will be given through a drawing at the awards banquet. Only 1 Canadian fish this year, and the final fish of the Derby was caught by Dave Shackford about 40 minutes before the close of the tournament.
But other than that, it was a great derby. The weather was perfect. There was killer whales out there again on Sunday that people saw. You know, everybody got some color. People liked the new rule that they didn't have to get their tickets punched every day if they were the season ticket holder. The amount of volunteer hours that goes into the derby is unreal. And for us to get in the most money we can get in makes us feel good. Even if we don't get paid for doing what we do, we are there to support our youth in this town.
The Haynes King Salmon Derby Banquet is Sunday, June 13th at 6 p.m. at the Bald Eagle Foundation. It's followed by the Sportsmen's Association's annual meeting. A Princess Cruises ship was back on course Monday after nearly 100 passengers contracted norovirus. The Sapphire Princess stopped in Skagway last Thursday before heading back to Seattle, where it underwent a major sanitation effort after unloading passengers. Between the Northern Lynn Canal and Washington, Princess officials confirmed 96 cases of the gastrointestinal illness norovirus, which can cause vomiting and diarrhea. Greg Wilkinson is with the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Noroviruses are a gastrointestinal illness that basically it gives you diarrhea. Most adults get diarrhea. Most children will throw up instead. But it's just a bug that gets into your intestines.
Symptoms of norovirus began appearing among Northern Lynn Canal residents last month, before the Sapphire's visit. But people living in port communities have come to expect the annual visitor since it became more widespread almost 5 years ago.
About 3 years ago or 4 years ago, it really kind of became very prevalent, at least in the news it did. And which I think is wonderful, because basically if you get the message out that people just need to wash their hands. They need to wash their hands before they eat. They need to wash their hands before they prepare food. They need to wash their hands after they use the bathroom. So if people washed more often, if they used hand sanitizer when they can't wash, we would find the spread of these illnesses to be really reduced.
When Princess Cruises became aware of the outbreak, crew members asked some of the infected passengers to stay in their rooms during the trip to keep the virus from spreading.
Actually, it's everywhere. You don't have to wait for a cruise ship to come in to get the norovirus. But basically what happens is when you get a lot of people compressed or condensed into one area, like a school or a cruise ship, it can spread fairly rapidly. I think most people who work in the communities that have the cruise ships visit them are aware of this, and most people who work in the shops are going to be extra diligent to wash their hands, to use hand sanitizer after being visited by people from the cruise ships. You know, it's just a good idea not to just focus on the cruise ship people, but, you know, when you have tourists in general, to assume the worst and take the precautions of washing your hands or using a hand sanitizer.
The extended cleaning effort caused the ship to depart for its next voyage 2 hours late last weekend. The Sapphire visits Skagway every Thursday through mid-September, but the norovirus could make another appearance any day.
Whether you are a cruise ship passenger or a member of the crew, or whether you work in a tourist community, it's washing your hands, it's using hand sanitizer, it's being really careful about not putting your hands in your mouth. You know, some people just do that as a nervous habit. You just want to make sure that you keep your hands clean, keep them away from your face, and you can go a long way towards not catching these illnesses and not spreading these illnesses.
You may not have heard of the University Cooperative Extension Service. It's more likely you've benefited from it.
You know, we've been in Alaska for 80 years, and we are a part of the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Joella Sparks is with the service, which has for years brought free presentations on life skills like canning, preserving, nutrition, agriculture, and home building to the people of the Northern Lynn Canal.
What I really love is the array of programs that we have, that we offer. You look at our publications, for example, which we try very hard to make them all free, and it's ranging on everything from radon in your home and how to establish a lawn to food preservation, how to, you know, grow carrots, how to test the soil in your garden, you know, energy efficiency, for example, winterizing your car or your home. I mean, the array of things is really amazing. That's just the publications. You know, the programs that we do are, we have a strong women's program that is for elderly women, help them learn how to exercise to build the density of their bones. We also, we have a, our energy specialist. You know, he travels around the state teaching cold climate home building.
She says now the service wants to know how it can be more helpful to communities like Clequan, Haines, and Skagway. The service is seeking public comment on a draft plan that'll guide work for the next 5 years. The plan outlines goals, objectives, and strategies in 6 areas: energy, health, food safety and security, economic development, climate change, and youth, family, and community. The draft itself was written with the help of public comment.
Our agents are out in the communities, and we talked about what's going on in the communities, what are the needs, what are the interests, and what can we do to help. And we had these themes that are in part driven by federal funding, but also state. And we said that the next step is, you know, here's where the directions we think we should go, and the next step is to take that to Alaskans and ask them, you know, is this where you think that the cooperative extension should be working to, you know, to help Alaskans? And the response was overwhelmingly yes.
Extension serves about 60,000 Alaskans annually and acts as a link between the state's population and the most helpful tools in the university system. Comments from any member of the public can be made through a link in the University Cooperative Extension Service website at uaf.edu/CES. The deadline for comments is next week, June 15th. Reporting for KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.